Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're going to shift gears in this final segment, but as always, you're welcome to join us on the exchange, and we're looking for your pithy and gem-like comments at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. And we do finish up the exchange today with a shortened version of Cocktail Hour. Don't worry, nobody will actually be imbibing. It's very early in the day. But we have a chance to pick the brains of a couple of people who work as bartenders, Jen Aiken and Nick Remonteria. Oops, I got it wrong already.
Yeah, you got it.
Okay, Remonteria. I work at Alchemy Bar in Ashland. And a particular cocktail is being celebrated there this week, the Negroni. So let's come back to the beginnings of where you guys come from. And Jen, I notice you have a degree in chemistry. That's got to help with bartending.
It does. There's a lot of precision and accuracy to make sure that, you know, every drink that every guest gets every time they come in is correct and tastes the same. So it definitely helps.
Nick, you're fairly new to tending bar, I understand. Tell us about the learning curve.
It's been an adventure. I just started a little over a year ago at the Brick Room here in Ashland, and that was my first introduction to some mixology, and I didn't know really that there was such a storied history behind it until I started working at Alchemy, and Jen recommended me this book we've got here, actually.
Imbibe. By David Wondrich. If you're interested in the history of cocktails, it's the history of how the word cocktail came about, the first cocktail, and really it outlines cocktails as a very American pastime, invented for the most part in the United States and hasn't really strayed much from the United States. So
what does the rest of the world drink?
They drink American cocktails.
All right, so the term itself, I have always wondered about the source of that. Like, why in God's name we call them cocktails?
Well, there's a few different accounts. There's the idea that an actual cocktail has multiple colors in it and kind of looks like a rooster's tail. So they kind of started shortening that to cocktail. There's another account that workhorses had their tails docked so it would not get in the way. And when they docked their tails, they actually lifted them up and they looked like a rooster tail. And another kind of with that is they used horses that were kind of mixed breeds as workhorses, not well-bred purebred horses. And so it's kind of the idea of mixing liquor and sugar and whatever else you want into your cocktail. So it kind of goes hand in hand. And that's kind of the prevailing theory.
I only laugh because I looked at both of you thinking, how many people come to a bar and really want to know the history as much as we do sitting here at this time of day?
It's a lot of people get excited, though, because they'll ask that question on occasion. And if you have an answer ready for them, most people aren't expecting, there is a reason behind this.
Well, so that raises a question about the kinds of skills that are required of you guys as bartenders. I mean, much has been said about you need to be part psychologist, part cop, part best friend, but part librarian, too, helps apparently when you're talking about
absolutely.
Cocktails. So talk about the mixture of skills there in addition to the mixture of drinks.
It's all about just making people feel welcome in your bar, greeting them, making sure they have what they need, making sure they're comfortable in their situations, that they're not being bothered by anybody around them. At the same time, you need to take a firm hand every now and then. Like you said, you got to be the cop. Somebody's getting a little rowdy, you know, you got to say, hey, listen up, get out.
And then on top of that, you have to multitask and you have to know hundreds of recipes, not just this is how it's different than being in a kitchen. You have your house cocktails that are on your menu that people can order. But then there are hundreds and hundreds of cocktails that people just have in the lexicon of their brain. You know, Manhattan's, old fashioned, things that you wouldn't see on a menu just because they are known to be ordered. And then you get the people that know so much about cocktails that they play Test the Bartender. And
which I actually is one thing I like about working at Alchemy. Because usually it's nothing, it's something that they think will be kind of obscure. They'll come in and look at you and be like, can you give me a Sazerac? You got it. And then they're super impressed.
Why, yes, sir. Or yes, off you go. Well, you know, when you have a bar named Alchemy, it seems like you probably have to have a slightly better grasp of a longer encyclopedia of cocktails.
Absolutely. And you know, I'm from Seattle, and in Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, New York, in the last 10 years there's been this huge cocktail trend happening, and it is extremely important to kind of keep up with that, to stay, you know, relevant and new. And so moving down here was really fun. It was kind of bringing some of those skills that I learned in Seattle and some of the products that I learned about down here and bringing all of that to Alchemy, which is super fun. So
whence comes the cocktail trend? Because it's, you know, I when I wrote the web blurb for this segment, I was also thinking in terms of the fact that we've got we've had, you know, new vineyards spring up all around the region for several years now. Craft breweries, there are craft spirit houses as well, making the harder liquors. So I guess it was just bound to happen to all corners of imbibing.
Well, this is like the fourth go-around of cocktail trends. It was really popular. The mint julep was created in the late 1700s. The cocktail was defined in 1806. That's when we kind of got the old-fashioned. We got the Sazerac around 1833. We had our first famous bartender, Jerry Thomas, come out in the 1800s. He was the first that actually wrote down recipes and was kind of a celebrity. He was written about by reporters from all over the world.
He was kind of the one who created the idea of what a bartender is, mixing drinks specifically for customers and what they want, coming up with new recipes, fresh ingredients,
remembering
spirits,
everyone's names.
Remembering everyone's names.
Yeah, so that was kind of the first. And then, you know, we had this really great cocktail trend, and then Prohibition hit. Prohibition kind of started a new trend, which included making really terrible spirits like bathtub gin taste good. So that's where we get like the bee's knees, which has honey and lemon in it to cover up just like this wretched, awful liquor that was being made. And then after Prohibition, we kind of go into like this dark age area. And then we get to the 70s and the 80s and we have, you know, sour mix and
vodka.
Everybody's drinking vodka. And Moscow mules. And we lose
martini
like,
in a can.
Exactly. We lose we lose all of the great spirits that we once loved, like rum, you know, bourbon, actually, as much as we love it now, kind of lost interest in the United States for a while. And then Dale DeGroff of the Rainbow Room in the 80s brought it back. He just decided one day, we have all these lemons and limes. Why don't we juice them?
He was tasked with the owner of the Rainbow Room in bringing back a classic style bar. And he was told, I want you to read this book by Jerry Thomas. He didn't know at the time that he was looking for a book that had been out of print for
100 years.
The book is from like 1865 or so.
Wow.
And so he finally tracked down this book and was like, oh, they used to juice lemons and limes and, you know, make raspberry syrup and mix that into their drinks. And
this is the Rainbow Room in New York?
Yes.
Okay. At 30 mm-hmm. Rock. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well known to broadcasters. We're talking cocktails with Jen Aiken and Nick Rementeria, who both work at Alchemy Bar in Ashland. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone. Email address jx@jeffnet.org. Our first Stump the Bartender question comes from Jeannie in Medford, who wants to know if you know how to make a velvet hammer.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh.
No.
Way to go.
Thanks,
Jeannie.
Thanks,
from Medford.
It's a 2 ounces Cointreau, 2 ounces Tia Maria coffee liqueur, and 2 ounces half and half.
Ah.
That's interesting.
Sounds velvety.
Sounds velvety and hammery.
And I don't know if you had a chance to look at our web entry about this segment, but in looking on Wikimedia Commons for a photograph of a cocktail, once I got past the blurry ones, which I assume were taken by the people drinking them, I found one called a brain hemorrhage. That was just disgusting.
Yeah.
Looking. Have you seen that?
I've heard of a brain hemorrhage. I think it's similar to maybe a mind eraser. I don't know.
Or a duck fart.
Or a duck.
Which, well, there's Bailey's involved in all of
right.
this, I think. Yeah.
See, and we get into this world of club shots and club bartending too, which is a whole different world from the craft world, where you have, you know, the Jaeger bombs and the Tootsie Roll Pops and the Girl Scout cookies, which when you get into the craft bartending world, you're tasked with drinks like the East India cocktail and Planter's Punch and Daiquiris and Manhattans. And so you kind of lose all of those recipes when you don't have to make them.
My favorite thing is when a guest asks me for a duck fart, and I can just look at them and go, no, I don't know what that is, and I'm not going
to
make it.
We don't have the ingredients to make those drinks, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, I don't know.
I can't make your acid green appletini. I just don't have the stuff.
Nope.
All right, so the question about training comes to mind. How does one sample cocktails and their preparation without getting falling down drunk? I mean, do you get to learn 4 new cocktails a night, and after that, it's like...
You know, we do this thing called a straw test. You just kind of, I don't know if you remember doing this as a kid, you put your finger on the top of the straw and you just get like a really, really tiny amount. And it's crucial for learning.
You have to do that all night long as you're mixing. So you're just getting little taste. You're not getting near enough to get drunk. So you can make sure it's quality assurance is what it is.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Making sure your drinks are coming out consistently, coming out good. You're not going to ruin anybody's night by giving them a bad drink.
Grab your headphones. We got a couple of questions about cocktail making for Nick and Jen. Here is George in Wairika. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi, George.
Thank you very much. Please don't duck. Here it comes. How do you stay out of political arguments? How do you not settle one, but keep the dust from flying?
Oh, excellent question. Thanks for that, George.
That is a really great question. And this actually pops up quite frequently, especially during election years. Mm-hmm. And I actually just have an across-the-board rule, which is no talking about politics in my bar. It kind of serves us extremely well. It still happens, and basically people ask me my opinions, and I say, nope, this is the realm that I do not partake in. politics, religion, money, those kinds of things.
Not a bad move.
I'm pretty good at just being able to kind of nod my head and smile and just say, I really wish I could charge you extra for being a terrible person. I keep that inside.
Inside's a good thing to keep inside. Mark and Redding, welcome to the Exchange.
Good morning.
Hi.
Are you able to hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I once was in a tavern / bar drinking a pint of craft beer, and I saw the bartender pouring all these alcohols into a pitcher, and I said, my God, what is that? It's a Long Island iced tea, and they're garbage. And I've never drunk one, but I'm wondering if he was correct in that.
Good question. Thanks,
that's
Mark.
What a Long Island iced tea. It is like glass of liquor.
It can be garbage if you don't make them correctly. They can also be quite delightful when made properly. They're not necessarily high on the list of craft bartenders' like go-tos, but a Long Island iced tea is just for the main clear liquors, so vodka, gin, rum, and tequila. Orange Curacao or Cointreau, if you're so inclined, lemon juice, a little bit of sugar, and Coke. So if you make it properly, it can taste quite delicious if that's what you're into. And I've never, ever not made one for somebody who asks for it.
Well, they were quite tasty back in the day.
Actually, but, Jen, I'm a little ashamed to admit this, but kind of one of my go-to drinks in college was the Tokyo tea, which is the same thing, but swap out the orange Curacao for Midori. And the Coke for Sprite.
Interesting. So more of a light color there. Anyway,
gets the job done.
John and Grants Pass. Welcome to the Exchange with Nick and Jen.
Tell us about a Blue Hawaiian. Last time I was in Hawaii, bartender said it's not so much about wine or beer; it's about fancy drinks.
All right. Thanks, John.
So the funny story about a Blue Hawaiian, I worked at this beer bar that turned into a club at night in Kansas City, Missouri, and we would get Blue Hawaiians requested all the time. Also, Blue Lagoons, AMFs, I'm not going to tell you what that stands for, but they all have Blue Curacao in them, which is essentially orange Curacao with blue food coloring, another product of the 80s, and I was told when I asked for the recipe of the Blue Hawaiian that just as long as it was sweet and had the color blue to it, nobody would notice.
Blue's the important part.
So, to be honest with you, I have never actually learned the official recipe for the Blue Hawaiian or the Blue Lagoon. They're just sweet, pineapple, I assume, and blue Curacao, and then probably lots of other yummy, delicious kinds of liquor.
Sweet, blue. That's all we're looking
all
for.
Counts, yep. Right. So I noticed that that Alchemy is one of the places that's hosting a celebration of the Negroni cocktail this week. How did this go? Who decides such things?
Well, so this started, Nick actually knows a little bit more about this than me. It started in 2013, mm-hmm. And it was mostly in the big cities. Do you know how exactly it got started?
I don't know exactly how it got started. I think Imbibe magazine is the one who started it. It's hosted by Imbibe and Campari, one of the ingredients in a Negroni. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if David Wondrich had his hand in it. But, yeah, so it started in the big cities, and just in the last 3 years has expanded exponentially. It's in 44 countries across the world now. 3,500, I think, venues participated last year. Mm-hmm. And so what it is, every bar who participates picks a charity or a nonprofit, and for every Negroni sold, they donate a portion of that Negroni to their chosen cause. So Alchemy is doing Rogue Valley Farm to School this year. We've got three different creative Negronis on our menu for the week in celebration.
Okay, quick question before we go. How critical are the measurements in any drink? I mean, does it have to be really exact and making sure that it tastes the same all places you get it?
Each drink is different. The spirit-forward drinks are the ones with only booze in them. You have to be very, very precise for the most part. The ones with juice and sugar, you can be a little more liberal. That's why you'll see speed pouring. That's a whole different thing. But you can be a little less intense about the ones with juice and sugar.
Okay, we've gotten quite an education here from Jen Aiken and Nick Rementeria from Alchemy Bar in Ashland. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.